You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Hi, this is Anthony Capozzoli with the How to Tour Italy radio show. Thank you very much for listening. And today, we are here with my friend Hand at her shop in Rome called Vino Roma, one of the coolest things to do while you're here visiting Rome. If you like wine or even if you don't know much about wine, this is definitely something to check out. You can do it even if you're here in Rome for only a single day. We did it the other day. It was wonderful. So we came back because we loved it so much to interview her and make sure that everyone that we talked to knew about something to do in Rome that's a lot of fun. You walk away having tasted some wonderful Italian wines, and it's definitely something that I highly recommend. So what we're going to do at first is talk a little bit with Hand about her inspiration, her background as a sommelier, a little bit about how she got started doing the wine tasting here, and then also talk about her wonderful success on TripAdvisor being one of the top one or two things recommended on TripAdvisor to do in Rome, and we're going to learn about why that is the case. And of course, then we're going to go into some wonderful wine tastings. We're going to be tasting sparkling wine from Italy. We're going to be tasting a white and a red, and I'm not going to give away any secrets because we're going to learn a few things about wine as we go. And with that, I'd like to introduce Hand and welcome her to the show. Thanks for being a part of the How Does Your Italy project.
Thank you.
You are very welcome.
How did it all start? I used to be just a wine enthusiast, and me and my husband, we would always go to wine tastings, and then at some point we started doing classes, taking classes. And then at some point we started traveling only because of wine. Everything was just geared totally towards wine. And at that time I used to be a software developer. So, at one point I had enough. I had enough of sitting in front of the computer all day. And, thanks to my lovely husband, I was in the position to just quit my job and, learn really about wines. So I did two sommelier trainings, an international one with the WSET, the Wine and Spirits Education Trust, based in London. And then later on, I also made the sommelier training of the Italian Sommelier Association, which was very different, but very nice for me. And so that's how it came about. From the very beginning, I knew that I didn't want to just become a sommelier in a restaurant. I knew I wanted to go into wine education because that was a whole motivation. I love wine and I want everyone to drink wine, and especially Italian wines. They are my personal favorite too, I have to say. So I just tried to, take the intimidation out of drinking wine, knowing wine, and it's so easy and it's so much fun, and you can have wine in almost any situation. So that's what I'm trying to show my guests.
And that's wonderful. And we were lucky enough to sit in on one of the classes here at Vino Roma, which is centrally located, I must say, in Rome. It's right across Ponte Cavour and on Lungotevere.
De Melini.
So if you get in a cab, just make sure you tell them the corner of Lungotevere de Melini and Ponte Cavour. And there's a wonderful cafe right there. You can grab an espresso if you get a little early, and walk right in. It's wonderful. And it's very easy to get into the building. With that, we kind of did the tasting the other day. And it's funny because, I mean, I like to drink wine. I don't know too much about wine. I like to think that I do, but I'm one of those guys that I have to fake it. And that's okay. I think we all do, especially folks from the United States. And since I'm American, I can say that this is a wonderful place to come and learn because you learn so much about wine. And what's great about it is I learned it doesn't have to be intimidating. I mean, you learn about the color of the wines, and we'll talk about that a little bit during our tasting here. The nose of the wine and the palate, is that the
palate,
right?
The
palate of the wine and the differences between Northern Italy and Southern Italy from the whites to the reds. And it's truly a wonderful experience. So this is something that you should not miss. And I was lucky enough actually from the timing perspective to do the wine tasting before dinner, which is great. It puts you in a great mood for dinner. So we went and had dinner at a place just across the Tiber. So, it's definitely something that I think everyone should try to do. And the website is vinoroma.com, and that's V-I-N-O-R-O-M-A com. So be sure to visit that. You can book your reservation right online.
Exactly. You can pay per PayPal.
Perfect. So it's very, so PayPal's the way to go. And then something else for your cruise enthusiasts out there, I just learned that there's a pretty cool option that if you come into Rome only for the day on a cruise ship, you can talk to your cruise director, and Honda's arranged some wine tastings for those folks coming in. I'm not going to give away too much detail about that. I'll let her speak to that a little bit. But something cool to do. I do have some friends coming in. I'm going to make sure that they know about that when they come in on their cruise ship.
Great, thank you. It's more geared towards the cruise guest who is here only in Rome for the day. So they can come in during lunchtime, around 12 or 1, depending, and they get to taste only 5 wines as opposed to the 7 wines I do with my standard tasting. And there is some food to go with it. Lovely Italian hams, prosciutto, salamis, cheeses, all different right. things. And you also get to learn a little bit about combining the food and the wine.
Which is great. That's one of the things that I was hoping to learn. And I did learn a thing or two about that in the tasting that, depending on, you know, where the wine is from, and you said 99.9% of the time, try to eat food from the region that the wine is made, which is something that people take for granted, I think. They're always, at least in the States, they're always trying to jam a Merlot or a Cabernet on the table. It doesn't always have to be the case, and we're going to learn about that a little bit today, too. So with that, I think maybe we can, or actually, let me take one step back and talk about the beautiful apartment that you get to enjoy the wines. It's wonderful. You take the elevator up. It's a very well-lit apartment. They've got an awesome table to sit down and enjoy the wines at, with a little map of Italy, with some highlights from the 4 or 5 different wine classifications here in Italy, which we'll get into while we're doing the tasting.
You didn't listen too good yesterday, did you?
Four
classifications.
Oh, see,
Anthony.
I blew it. That's why I'm not the sommelier. That's why actually I came back for, this is actually a tutor session. I came back to learn a little bit more. So wonderful stuff. And maybe with that, we can kick off some of the tasting stuff. That'd be great.
That would be great. Okay. For today, I decided to start with a bubbly because everyone loves a bubbly. And a lot of my guests who come to me tell me that they like Prosecco. And Prosecco is a great wine from the north of Italy, actually. And it's a bubbly, but it's, let's say, it's a rather simple wine. It is off dry to sweet, and it's made with a method that's not the best way, let's say, to make a bubbly. And some of my guests even just mean any bubbly when they say Prosecco. Prosecco is actually one of the classifications we talked about. It's one of the highest classifications, and it is protected, and it has to be made 100% out of the Prosecco grapes, which is grapes. Prosecco comes from the grapes. So now we are going to have a spumante, which is the general name for any bubbly you can have in Italy. And this is going to be a Franciacorta. Franciacorta is actually exactly the same method as you know from champagne.
Oh.
So this is, I think, I don't drink any champagnes anymore, I have to say. it's because the Franciacorta that we have in Italy, it is a perfect alternative. A perfect alternative, and it is made from, well, not exactly the same grapes, but the major part is Chardonnay, as is with champagne, and it's a lot, let's say, cheaper. I don't like the word cheap that much, but it's affordable. Okay, let's say it's affordable. It's a lot more affordable. And the one we have here today, it's a special version of it. It's a Sauternes. I guess everyone understands what that means, although it's a dialect word from up there. And it's just that there is less pressure in the bottle. So, so the bubbles are a lot, let's say, creamier, a lot nicer in your mouth. Okay?
Great.
So now, let's taste it.
Sure. I'm going to put the microphone down, everyone. So, if you can't hear me, I do apologize, but I really want to try the wine.
First thing that we do is we look at the wine. It's not just because, I mean, this one here especially nice because of all the bubbles and everything going up there. And when you have a spumante, a bubbly in your glass, it's you should always do that. Just look at the bubbles, see how many of them there are, how little, how small, how fine they are, and how persistent these bubbles go up. There should be enough bubbles in your glass. There should be, really, they should be going up all the time. During the time you drink all the bubbly in your glass, you should still have bubbles coming up to the surface. That's very important. It's a sign for a good bubble. Okay?
Wonderful.
Then we look at the color. Remember this from yesterday. We absolutely always look at the color. It's the same thing for the spumante too. And see now, if you hold the white background behind your glass, see how this one is really greenish. It's very pale. It's yellow, okay, but it's a rather green yellow, and it's very pale. And this is typical for North Italian wines, bubbly or still. It's of course there's always exceptions. There are some procedures in the cellar that the winemaker can apply to affect the color of the wine a little bit. But generally speaking, if you have a wine like this in your glass, this pale yellow, greenish yellow, even, it means you have a wine from north of Italy. It's because of the climate. We have less sun, less sunny hours or less sunny days, let's say. So the plants don't have a lot of time or a lot of power to produce too much sugar, too many extracts, let's say, too much aroma. So we do get these lighter wines from the north of Italy.
That's great. And it's interesting because I get a lot of questions, via email and stuff, people coming over. And one of the questions that did come up is all sparkling wine in Italy Prosecco. We learned that is not the case. And then something else is, how do the bubbles get in the bottle? So I know that might be a silly question, but actually I kind of want to know because I don't even know the answer to that question. Not that I would.
Okay. The bubbles come in there. The genie brings them. it is actually what the method for Franciacorta, which is the same as the Champagne, is that you first make a wine. You make a totally normal still wine. And then you put them in the bottles and you add a little bit, let's say, sugary, yeasty wine in there. And then you close the bottles. Mm. And then you let them sit there for, well, there are different time slots for this, but up to 7 years, up to 10 years. So it's the oldest sugar and the yeast and the wine sit together in the bottle all this time, and it ferments, but during fermentation there is carbon dioxide, which is produced. This is just very normal byproduct.
Sure.
And because the bottle is closed, it cannot get out of there. It gets out when you open your bottle. And did you just notice that when I opened the bottle, you didn't hear anything? That's the way to do it. It's not because you're snobs and whatever, not because of that. It's very important because, some people work very hard to get these bubbles into this bottle. You paid rather much to have these bubbles in your glass. And if you let your bubbly bottle open with this big kaboom, you're losing all this pressure that has been built up in there. You're losing all this carbon dioxide, all this pressure. It's up to 7 atmosphere pressure in a bottle of bubbly. So you're not going to have any bubbles or less bubbles in your glass, and the bubbles is the nicest part of it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's wonderful to know. I didn't realize that, because every time I do open it, I always have a big explosion of bubbles. So.
Exactly. You just want to have, we call it an angel sighing, That's the sound that you're supposed to hear when you open a bottle of bubbly. That's all, nothing more.
That's wonderful. Let's try this. I can't wait to give because it tastes so good when it hits your lips.
Okay. Oh, you have to wait for the lips. All right? You're not there yet. Okay, you first have to smell your wine, for any wine, okay? Just stick your nose into your glass and take a deep breath through your nose. Okay, and now I know this is the part where it gets a little bit intimidating for most wine drinkers or beginners. It's because you hear all these people, the so-called critiques and everything, talk about all these different strange aromas. And first of all, you're like, where does all this come from? Like, what does cat pee do in my wine? And second of all, you're like, I cannot smell all of that. What I tell everyone is, just forget about it. Just close your eyes, stick your nose into your glass, and try to come up with an association, with something from the nature, not necessarily edible. Most of the time it's edible, but doesn't have to be. Or also any memory that you have, anything that you can think about. And don't be shy about it. There is almost no wrong answer, let's say. If you smell, if you don't have a disability, real medical problem with smelling, you do smell something in there.
Sure.
You just have to let loose, let's say, and come up with the aromas that you're smelling in your glass. What would you say that you're smelling in here?
Well, in this one, I kind of smell like fresh grass or fresh cut grass, maybe after a rain or something.
Very good. I like that. Exactly. That's
That's how it is supposed to be too. It is from the north. It is typical that you have the light, fresh aromas, and also a Franciacorta is supposed to be. It can be at times, let's say, a little bit yeasty, but this one is not very pronounced yeasty. This one is more on the fresher side, lighter side. You know, it's supposed to just cleanse your mouth when you're eating. What a lot of people don't know is that you can combine a Franciacorta throughout your whole meal.
That's wonderful. That's something I didn't know either. I mean, I would figure either before or after most of the time.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people just think it's an aperitivo. It's not. You can drink it all through your dinner. Mm. Okay, now we are going to taste it. How we do is, okay, I would like you to first take a very small sip.
Sure.
And just follow it down. This is just to, you know, acclimatize your palate. And then take a bigger sip and keep this one a little bit longer in your mouth.
Okay.
Work with it. Chew on it. Okay, let it cover your tongue. And if you can, also just, you know, suck in a little bit air through your teeth because it opens up the aromas.
Great.
Okay? Now we'll do that.
Here we go. It's delicious. I love it.
Okay, but you have to say a little bit more than that. Just delicious? I like to hear that, but it's not enough. Okay, let's first start by how was it? You know, we looked at our wine, we talked about it, we smelled, and you were already expecting something. Was mm-hmm. it like how you thought it would be, or was there a difference?
It was a little different. It did kind of stay true to the fresh grass in my mind, but it had a little bit more of a, I think I said this yesterday, but I'm not trying to duplicate that, but it had a little bit more like a citrus tone to it, I thought, and mm-hmm. Kind of a fresh fruit, but like mm-hmm. a lighter fruit to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, like apples, green apples maybe,
yeah,
or citrus
definitely.
Is definitely in there. So how was the feeling in your mouth? I mean, you definitely felt the bubblies, of course.
Sure.
But other than that, did you have maybe a little bit more salivation in your mouth as you had the wine in your mouth or also afterwards?
I did. I definitely salivated a bit, and it was a little bit of a punch to it, I thought, which was very nice.
Okay, that's the acidity. That's a perfect sign for acidic wines. When you have acidity, it does make you salivate more, which is actually perfect. That's also one of the reasons why Italian wines are such great wines to combine with food, which is actually the Italian culture. You know it as good as I do, that when Italians eat food, they drink wine. When they drink wine, they eat food.
Right.
It's just unheard of just sitting somewhere and drinking wine. So Italian wines do, in general, tend to be a little bit more acidic than wines that we find in other parts of the world. And this one here is especially acidic, so it does, you know, it does make a little bit for a juicy mouth. So when you have something like that, it's best to combine it with a food that normally maybe would be too dry in your mouth, like the chicken breast or the turkey breast, mm-hmm. even worse, you know, without a big sauce, just grilled or from the pan, you know, you chew and chew on it, and it gets bigger in your mouth. So if you combine it with an acidic wine, not necessarily only bubblies, you know, any acidic wines, it's going to be perfect. It's not, the wine is not going to bite in your mouth anymore that terribly, let's say. Or the food is going to go down a lot better. That's what we are trying to reach when we are combining food and wine, that the sum is bigger than the parts of it.
Sure. And it's true. I mean, I think that a lot of that gets lost in translation. I know for me, I'm intimidated by pairing the food with a particular kind of wine or vice versa, and that's why I often have to ask for assistance. But those are good tips. I mean, kind of the bite of the champagne – Franciacorta, excuse me.
Very good.
I was going to say something wrong. So that's nice. I mean, it's also fun to kind of experiment, I think, too, right, with the wines that you like and the foods that you enjoy and try to find the right combination of those things. So that's something else I think is a fun process for people to do.
Exactly. That's the biggest part of the fun, let's say, just having your dinner and then trying to think about, okay, which wine should I combine with this, and then try and maybe make mistakes, which is perfectly fine. The next time you know that you shouldn't combine that wine with that food.
Right.
Okay, now we are going to go to still white wine.
Perfect. Yes. Yes, my mom's side is from Sicily, and my dad's side is from Campania.
Oh, okay. Nice combination.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember, we were talking about the wine and the color of it, and the first one. one we had was such greenish light, and it showed us it was from the north. Now we are going to see how a white wine from Sicily is going to look like.
That's great. And yesterday, while Honda's opening the wine, we learned something that I thought was interesting, that a corked bottle of wine, there's a difference between corked and, I guess, slightly corked. That we talked about. Maybe I'm not using the right terminology, but if the wine is corked, you'll know that it's corked and you'll smell it right away. But a lot of people maybe get a wine that there's some cork damage, if you will, or some it's a tainted cork, and so they automatically dismiss the wine as bad. They don't like it, and that isn't always the case. I mean, it may have just been a slightly tainted cork, so don't give up just because you may have had a wine that had a slightly tainted cork. I mean, maybe try that same bottle of wine that isn't tainted, and you might find that you do enjoy it, because I'm sure that it's happened to me on more than one occasion. So that's something that I learned yesterday. And for the first time ever, I got to experience what a corked wine smelled like. Han was so kind to give us an opportunity to do that. And it was really obvious. I didn't think it would be so obvious on my nose, but you could really, really tell, because it does smell like a cork.
Exactly. Like, it smells like, I have heard things about, like, dirty socks or the basement of your grandfather's house and stuff
right.
like that, or rotten eggs. It can be any or all of these smells in there. And just correctly, as you said, if it's that obvious, everyone recognizes it and says, okay, there's a mistake with this wine. The problem is, as you said, the tainted ones, you know, the just slightly off ones, where you don't necessarily realize that there is a problem. You just drink the wine, but unfortunately the wine is already gone.
Right.
You just drink the wine, and if you're not familiar with the wine, you just think, okay, I don't like this wine. I'm not going to buy it ever again. And this is really the worst nightmare of every winemaker.
Sure. Yeah, because you dismiss it as no good, and it's not the case at all. It just had a tainted cork. So give every wine at least a couple of chances, you know? I mean, that's my advice.
It's always good.